Okay, we can get underway, I guess. So first thing I want to point out is after today's lecture, we're all talk about two applications of determinants, Kremer's rule and how to calculate the inverse of a matrix using determinants. This material, as well as what we've discussed thus far, how to compute determinants, that's going to be covered in some homework problems in homework set eight. So I'm going to make that due on Monday, just so that we're all essentially caught up with lecture next week when we start really using determinants to find eigenvectors and eigenvalues. So today's plan is actually not too advanced. What I want to do is give you two formulas that allow you to solve old problems using determinants. The main thing I'm trying to show you in today's lecture is how the algorithm, the row reduction algorithm, can be avoided so long as you have a determinant in your hand. And determinants are such an important function. Any computer software, mathematical computer software program that's worthy of any respect at all will have a function that will let you feed in a matrix and it kicks out the determinant. So in practice, I've given you a number of formulas, in fact, three formulas for computing the determinant, but they tend to be hard to apply simply because A, if you're trying to write out the determinant of an arbitrary matrix, it's a polynomial in the entry to the matrix, but it's a huge polynomial for any matrix of reasonable size. The example I like to give is a simple 6x6 matrix. Its determinant, if you think of the entries of the matrix as variables, is going to be a polynomial of degree 6, not so bad, but it's going to have 720 distinct terms. So, and then if you use the permutation formula for computing determinants, there again, you're trying to express the entire determinant as a function of the entries of a matrix. Those are end up going to be polynomials as well and hard to calculate for matrices of even moderate size. The only really efficient way of computing determinants of matrices of moderate size is row reduction. But so that's kind of contrary to the theme I'm trying to present today, in that while we use row reduction sometimes to calculate the determinants, in practice you don't, because if any matrix of moderate size, you would anyway, once you leave this course, be using computers or something else to compute those determinants. Just like you don't use Taylor expansions to compute the value of cosine of 3, rather you plug it into your calculator and get it. That's essentially how you'll probably be using determinants in the future. Okay, so the goal for today now is to show you two applications where we don't know how to solve the problem posed except by using row reduction. I'm now going to give you two rules for calculating, for example, the solution set of a linear system without doing any row reduction, or the process of finding the inverse of a matrix. We can carry that out without doing any row reduction at all. What's nice about this is I make a distinction between algorithms and functions. Algorithms are just a set of rules that you apply. You reach one stage, and then you see what you got in the last stage, and you figure out something new to do. Like the row reduction algorithm, you start in the upper corner, and you remove pivots below. Then you move to the next lower pivot, and you move out the entries below, etc. But you don't really see the answer until you reach the answer. On the other hand, when things are expressed in terms of formula, closed formulas, you can see some of the structure of the answer before you actually calculate it. And for example, there'll be conditions where what we'll see when we actually get to this cofactor matrix is that the inverse of a matrix, its entries are actually nice rational functions of the entries of the original matrix, meaning it's just a ratio of polynomials at worst. And oftentimes you can actually arrange it so that the entries of the inverse of a matrix are just polynomials in the entries of the original matrix, which makes it even though it's still kind of loose and doesn't specify what the matrix inverse is exactly, at least it shows you the functional form. And in fact, if you had to integrate the inverse of a matrix, it'd be nice to know that the polynomial entries are all polynomials and so are easily integrated. Okay, so let me give you the first rule. It concerns solving linear systems, the so-called Cramer's rule. And it concerns linear systems, so coefficient matrix times a vector of variables is equal to another vector. But unfortunately, because we're going to take some determinants, and you can only take determinants of square matrices, this rule is only going to apply to square linear systems where we have as many equations as we have unknowns. And in addition, we're going to have to require the inverse of the coefficient matrix exists. All right, so if we have a system of n equations and n unknowns, and I know that this matrix A has an inverse, then in fact, I'm going to need to calculate the determinant of A anyway to apply this formula. So if A doesn't have an inverse, what's going to happen is that this formula here is not going to make sense because you'll be trying to divide by zero. Remember, the determinant, it detects whether or not a matrix has an inverse or not. If it's equal to zero, you don't have an inverse. If it's not equal to zero, then it will have an inverse. So the fact that this denominator, the reason why I say invertible systems is I want to guarantee this denominator is not equal to zero so that this formula actually makes sense. But given that, once I have a linear system, what you can do is you can take the data, the coefficient matrix and the vector on the right-hand side, and you can use this to create a bunch of auxiliary matrices. So, for example, BU1, this is going to be the matrix that you form by taking this vector, writing it as a column, and then the remaining columns of this matrix are just going to be the columns of A. So this, the second column of B1 is going to be the second column of A, written as is, and then the last column of A written vertically. And these other matrices, I have as many of these matrices BIs as I have variables, because counting across the top, X1, X2, et cetera, XN, the way we usually assign variables to columns, we're going to have one variable for each column of this matrix, and that means effectively we're going to have one component of the solution as well, because we have n of these matrices, one for each column of the original matrix, and so that makes perfectly good sense. And then the statement is, if you want the solution vector, x equals x1, x2, xn, then the value of the ith component of that is just the determinant of the matrix I create by replacing the ith column of the original matrix by the vector on the right-hand side of the original linear system. And I divide that determinant by the determinant of A. So that's the formula. It's a pretty simple formula to write down, and it's pretty simple to implement as well. This I'll do with a quick example. So stressing here, the way these auxiliary matrices are written down is you just take the original matrix, you erase a given column, say the ith column, and you just replace it with B. All right, so here's an example. Here we have a 2x2 linear system. Here's the coefficient matrix. 2 is the coefficient of the first variable in the first equation. 1 is the coefficient of the second variable in the first equation. And the second row is similarly determined. Then you have the column vector on the right-hand side that you get simply by writing the numbers, and on the right-hand side of the original equation, writing them as a column. All right, so let's quickly compute the determinant of the coefficient matrix. Here, it's a 2x2 matrix, so we'll just use the difference of the diagonal products. 2 times minus 1 minus 1 times 2. These two formulas that are right up on the blackboard here, these you should just know. If you have a 1x1 matrix, its determinant is A1. Determinant of a 2x2 matrix, A, B, C, D, is the difference of the diagonal products. So I'll always use these two basic formulas throughout the thing. Even when I'm computing determinants of 3x3 matrix, et cetera, what I tend to do is use the cofactor expansion formula to calculate determinants. So for larger matrices, determinants are harder to compute, but what you use is generally, well, there's three different ways to compute them, but let me give you a way that we'll use today. There's a cofactor expansion formula, wherein the determinant of a matrix is given by a sum over either rows or columns. Let's say, well, sum over columns in this first instance. You have the entry in the ith row and jth column times the sine factor. That's the sum of the row and column index we have here. And then you have the determinant of an auxiliary matrix called the ith jth minor of A. What this matrix is, it's A with ith row and jth column deleted. So it's a smaller matrix. See, has one less row and one less column. But so in general, for a matrix that's larger than a 2x2 matrix, you're going to have to use a more complicated formula for the determinant. The one we'll use mostly today is this cofactor expansion formula. That if I had a 3x3 matrix, this formula will allow me to compute the determinant of a 3x3 matrix by summing over a bunch of determinants of 2x2 matrices. And then, like for these guys, I'd be able to use one of these formulas. And of course, here I'm keeping the row index fixed, and I'm summing over the column indices. So this corresponds to moving across the ith row of a matrix and picking up various terms. But there's an alternative formula where instead of summing over the column indices, you sum over the row indices. But except for how that sum is arranged, the other terms or the thing you sum has exactly the same form. I plus j determinant m I j. I should remark also that when you're computing the determinant of a large matrix, which of these formulas you apply, and in particular, which row or which column you keep fixed, you usually look for rows where lots of entries are zeros, because if a entry is zero, that means this factor is going to be zero, which is going to mean it's not going to contribute to the total sum. So you won't have to compute that matrix. All right, so that's sort of stuff we've already covered. But let's now work through this example. System of linear equations, coefficient matrix, the inhomogeneous term on the right-hand side expressed as a vector. I've calculated the determinant of A. And now what I'm going to do is create these auxiliary matrices. So the first one is where I replace the first column of A with this vector. So the second column didn't change, but I did replace the first one. And let's calculate its determinant. It's 2x2, so I'll just do the difference of the diagonal products. And then I have a second auxiliary matrix that I'll just replace the second column of A with this vector. And I'll compute its determinant. And now I have all the information I need to apply Cramer's rule. except I don't have it written on the board anymore. Cramer's rule says that if x equals x1 to xn is a solution vector, I wrote it horizontally, but I could have written it vertically as well. If it's a solution vector, then each of these components is calculable, not by necessarily doing row reduction, but rather by comparing these determinants, bi divided by determinant of A. Okay, so we've got all the data computed here. We've got all these determinants computed. We've got determinant of A computed. So we'll have that denominator. It's always going to be equal to negative 3. And then B1 is its determinant is negative 3. B2 is its determinant negative 6. And so that first component of the solution vector is 1. Second component of the solution vector is 2. And so that's the solution. The value of x, x1 and x2 that will satisfy the original linear system are x equals 1, x2 is equal to 2. And indeed, here's the original matrix A. Here's what I'm proposing to be a solution vector, a vector with component 1 and 2. When I multiply those together, I get a vector 4 minus 1, but that's identical to the vector we had originally on the right-hand side of the equation. So if I verified that this vector actually satisfies the original equation. Okay, so it's that simple to apply. And in fact, when you're solving large linear systems, typically what you'll do once you get past this course is ask a computer to solve it for you. This is really fast. You can see, as long as a computer knows how to compute determinants, this is really rapid for it to carry out. So it's typically, for square linear systems, the way computer algebra systems rapidly solve large systems of linear equations. All right, so a second thing we use row reduction for. Remember, prior to this rule, the only way we had of solving this system was by writing down an augmented matrix, row reducing to row echelon form, writing down the corresponding equation, expanding in terms of the free variables. So that was quite a long process. And in fact, you didn't have any idea of what the solution would look like until you reached the last step when you expand in terms of the free variables. But this calculation effectively gives you an explicit formula. This is going to be a polynomial in the entries of A, but it's going to be linear in B because each column is only going to have one entry from B. So you can actually extract certain formal information about the solutions of this from this formula. Both of these are just polynomials in the entries of A, while this guy is going to actually be linear in this variable there. All right. So what I'm going to do next then is give you another formula that allows us to avoid row reduction in a calculation that previously we could only carry out using row reduction. Well, let's see, I'll put that up here. Let me remind you of the cofactor expansion. For the determinant of a matrix, that's determinant of a matrix A is equal to a sum over I equals 1 to n. Well, let's do columns. J equals 1 to n, Aij minus 1 to the I plus J times the determinant of the ijth minor. All right, or summation I equals 1 to n, Aij minus 1 to I plus J, determinant of Mij. So here are the two formulas. In the first version, what we do is we keep a row index fixed, and then we move across a row, grabbing the entry, a sign factor that really only depends on the position of this entry inside the matrix, and then a determinant of a matrix smaller than the original matrix that's obtained by removing the ith row and jth column of A. But there's an alternative formula. Instead of moving across the ith row, you could move down the jth column. As you move down through a column, you change the row index. But you have a similar formula, and if you just ignore the sum, these two factors are exactly the same in both formulas. Exactly. But it just, it's how you carry out the sum that changes. And so these guys, I'll write it Cij, defined as minus 1 to the I plus j, determinant Mij. These common factors in both formulas, they are called cofactors of A. And in fact, for each row index and each column index, you're going to have a distinct minor to which you can compute its determinant. And so you'll have n squared of these numbers to compute if you want to compute all the cofactors. I is going to range between 1 and n, and the column index j is going to range between 1 and n. All right, now these guys, which are computed by taking determinants of minors, we're going to use those to calculate the inverse of a matrix. So the first thing we do, before I even give you the formula for the inverse, is we take these numbers. As soon as I give you a matrix A, you can compute all these numbers explicitly. So let's assume we've computed all these numbers. I have n squared numbers labeled by two indices, a row index and a column index. I can use those numbers, and I can just arrange them in the matrix in a natural way. Here's the row index, and here's the column index, by simply taking this set of numbers and arranging them according to the labeling of their, the way they're labeled. We can arrange them in an n by n matrix. That matrix is called the cofactor matrix of A. So what's going to happen is you're going to form a matrix C, where you have C11 in the first column, C12 in the second column, C1n in the last column of the first row, and then you'll have similar entries CN1 to CNn. Generally speaking, there's a lot of these numbers to compute. If you have a 3x3 matrix, you have 9 numbers to compute. But let's assume that we have a good computer software program, and for which once we feed in A, these determinants are all readily evaluated, and we just use them to plug into create a new matrix C. All right, so here's the formula. If A is an invertible matrix, then the entry in the ith row and jth column of its inverse is, well, here's one determinant, 1 over the determinant of A, and then we're going to use these numbers that we created here. However, important thing to note about this formula, and this is not a typo, the row index and column index have been reversed. That's essential to get this formula to work. But with the small caveat here that you have to reverse the roles of the row and column index there, this gives you a way of calculating the inverse of a matrix using only determinants. This is clearly a determinant, and those numbers, the cofactors, well, they're defined as determinants of minors of the original matrix. And so this formula then allows me to calculate all the entries of the inverse of A. So in fact, A minus first itself, by simply using determinants. All right, now, that's the way I like to explain it, but the textbook does it instead of one foul swoop as I did it. They introduce an auxiliary matrix called the matrix adjugate to A. What that is, it's the you calculate that matrix C, and then you take its transpose. So you convert rows into columns. What that will do is here, the roles of rows and columns, I is a row here, but I is a column index for C. J is a column index for A, but it's going to be a row index for this matrix C. So there's a discrepancy between what we interpret as a row index and a column index, depending on which side of the equation we look at. Well, we can get rid of that discrepancy by simply taking the matrix C, interchanging its rows and columns, and now everything will match up. The textbook in WebAssign, they refer to the transpose of this matrix C that we're creating this way. They're calling that the matrix adjugate to A. But in terms of that matrix, then I can express a formula directly in terms of the matrices rather than in terms of the entries of the matrix. And so the inverse of the matrix A is 1 over the determinant of A times the transpose, the adjugate matrix, or the transpose of this matrix. Again, I'm only using determinants. This adjunct matrix is just the transpose of C, and C itself is computed by taking a bunch of determinants of minors of the original matrix. So in calculating and applying this formula, all I have to do is compute some determinants, a lot of them, but it's only involving computations of determinants. And in fact, let me see if I can point out another feature of this. These cofactors, they're determinants of minors of A. Each entry of this matrix is an entry of the original matrix A. It's just that I've deleted a certain row in a certain column. So these matrices, their entries are all entries in A. Their determinant then is just going to be a polynomial in the entries of A. So in fact, these entries, C11, C12, C1n, in the end, these are each polynomials in the entry of A. So we see that taking, at least computing this cofactor matrix, nothing more complicated from going from the entries of A to its the cofactor matrix. It's just the individual entries of this matrix are just polynomials in the entries of the original matrix. That's not quite true of this inverse matrix. If we didn't have this factor here, taking the transpose of a matrix is just putting them in different places. It's not changing how they depend on the entries of A. They'll still be polynomials. Where the singularities, singularities in this inverse occur because of this denominator determinant of A. So this is going to be a polynomial in the entries of A. The entries of this matrix are all going to be polynomials in the entries of A. But when I combine them in this fashion, what I get is a rational function, right? Because I have a matrix with a bunch of polynomial entries divided by a polynomial. Divided by a polynomial is, generally speaking, a rational function. But still, not too bad. Fairly simple function to deal with. Not like we have complicated transcendental functions relating entries of a matrix to its inverse. Okay, so let me apply this formula with an example. Here's a 2x2 matrix. I'm going to show you the polynomial structure explicitly here, or the rational function explicitly here. So let's start with a 2x2 matrix, A, B, C, D. For this, we can do everything symbolically. We can, these first cofactor, it's going to be the 1-1 cofactor. So we take, I'm just applying this formula. I look at where the entry occurs, and I'm grabbing a column index, a row index and a column index. And then I'm computing a sign that's going to be the even or odd, depending on how the row index and column index end up. And then I'll have a determinant of a minor I get, by removing the ith row and jth column from the original matrix. So here we are applied here. The row index and column index are both one, so there's the sign factor. And then when I remove the first row and I remove the first column, I'm left with a one by one matrix with a single entry D. So this is just going to work, and the determinant of a one by one matrix is just the single entry. So I have a factor of one because it's minus one to an even power, and determinant of a one by one matrix. Well, we can do the same for each of the other cofactors. For this entry here, the entry is B. The sign is, this is in the 1-2 position, first row, second column. So the sign is going to be minus one to an odd number. And then the minor associated with this entry is the one by one matrix with sole entry C. And so it works out like that. And similarly, we can get a 2-1 entry. The 2-2 entry corresponds to this spot. There's the minor. And the sign is, because this is in the 2-2 slot, is minus 1 to the 2 plus 2. And now we have all the ingredients. In fact, we've computed all the entries of this matrix. There it is. I just take this natural ordering here, and I insert the result in the corresponding slots of the matrix C. Now, the adjunct matrix is going to be the transpose of this matrix. So to write it down, I take the first column of C to get its transpose. I write that first column as the first row. To get the second row, I take the second column and write it in the same numbers in the same order, but I write them horizontally. All right, so now I've got everything except the formula that we need. The formula is the inverse of A is equal to 1 over the determinant of A times this adjunct matrix, which I'll write as C transpose. And here it is. And so there's the formula that we'll apply. For a 2-by-2 matrix, the determinant is going to be A times D minus B times C. That explains that factor. And then there's the adjugate matrix, and we're done. And what do you see about this inverse? It is this matrix C, as advertised. It's a nice polynomial. In fact, it's linear in the entries of the original matrix. And the inverse, though, has this additional factor coming from the determinant A that appears in the denominator. So if you have problems with the individual entries of an inverse of a matrix, they're probably coming from this denominator. That's where you can have singularities, but everywhere else it's a perfectly good function. All right, and then I'll prove to you that in fact, the matrix given by the formula is indeed the inverse of A by simply multiplying the things together. When you multiply these two matrices together, this is what results. Notice that the off-diagonal entries cancel. Minus C plus CA is going to equal zero. This DB minus BD is going to equal zero. And then the things that are along the main diagonal, they're actually going to be canceled by this factor. AD minus BC is exactly that factor, as is minus CB plus AD. And so we get exactly the inverse of a matrix that way. All right, now what's nice about this formula is it's not so hard to memorize, and it's really useful, even outside linear algebra. 2-by-2 linear systems, AX plus BY is equal to some number D, CX plus DY is equal to C, those are fairly common where you have systems of two equations and two unknowns. Here you get the inverse matrix of the coefficient matrix from which you can use to solve the linear system. And it's not that hard to even memorize. You're going to need to use the determinant of A. Well, that's not hard to write down for a 2-by-2 matrix, AD minus BC. And then what happens to A itself is two things. Along this main diagonal, they switch positions. And along the opposite diagonal, they just switch signs. But Now, this formula is really not that hard to memorize, and it gives you, if you, as long as you got it memorized, you can almost instantly calculate the determinant of any calculate the inverse of any 2x2 matrix. So, for example, let me see if I can work on that. I'll do it right here because it's so simple. Suppose I want to know I have A is equal to 1, 2, 2, 1. What is A to the minus first? Well, I can, since I'm, this formula is given in terms of arbitrary entries, all I have to do is plug into this formula. So it's going to equal A to the minus first. It's going to be 1 over A times D, which is 1, minus 2 times 2, which is 4. And then what I do is I switch the positions of the diagonal elements. Well, they're the same. So even though I switch positions, they look the same. And then what you do to the off-diagonal elements, you switch their sign. So this matrix I could write down really quickly using this formula is going to be the inverse of A. A to the minus first is going to be, looks like, this is going to be a factor of negative 1/3, so it's going to be minus 1/3 plus 2/3 plus 2/3 minus 1/3. Main point of this is I calculated this inverse without doing any row reduction. Now, these formulas that I've thus far only applied for 2x2 matrices can also work equally well for larger matrices. So I'll try to keep the formulas up and just give you some more examples. So here's a 3x3 system. We'll use Cramer's rule to solve it. So we're going to use this formula. Well, what we need to apply that formula is we need to construct these auxiliary matrices and take their determinants. We're also going to need the determinant of A. So we start off writing down, converting the equations into the matrices that encapsulate the data that goes into specifying those equations. And now, let's see, I'm going to compute the determinant of A. Eventually, so the determinant of A, what's the easy way of calculating it? It looks like what I chose to do here is an expansion, cofactor expansion along the bottom row. So I have a 0 entry, then I have a 1, and I have a sine factor associated with this position as well. It's going to be minus 1 raised to the power 3 plus 2, because this entry is in the third row and second column. Well, minus 1 to an odd power is going to give you a minus sign. So I have the entry, a sign, and then I have the determinant of the corresponding minor. When I remove the second column and the second row, I'm left with a matrix 1, 0, 0, 1. That's this matrix. And similarly, I'll have the contribution from the 3, 3 entry of this matrix. There's the entry itself. The sign, well, it's minus, this is the 3-3 entry. So the sign associated with this position is going to be minus 1 to the 3 plus 3. Minus 1 to the 6 is 1. So there's no sign change here. And then the corresponding minor is 1 minus 1, 1, 2. All right, and so we quickly calculate the determinant of A to be 4. Then we have these auxiliary matrices. So in each case, I'm replacing one of the columns of A with the column vector 602 that's coming from the original system. So there's the first one. First column has been replaced, second one, and the third one. And now I compute some determinants. To compute B1, I'll do a cofactor expansion along the second row. There's the first term and the last term, I'm not going to contribute because the entries there are 0, and I only have to compute one determinant to get the determinant of this 3x3 matrix. The second one, here's another nice convenient row. I can do a cofactor expansion along the second row, so I'll only have to compute one determinant. Works out like that. And then for this third matrix, well, there's no row or column that only has a single non-zero entry. Well, I have maybe a couple choices for cofactor expansions that will require me to calculate two determinants. I think what I've done here is I've done a cofactor expansion along the bottom row. There's the zero, the one with the right sign, and then the two with the right sign as well. So at any rate, I've reduced computations of the determinants of B1, B2, and B3 to the computation of a bunch of 2x2 matrices, and I carry that out. And then I can write down the solution. Now here, my labeling of variables is a bit different. In the original linear system, I called my variables X, Y, and Z instead of X1, X2, and X3. So when I write down the solution, I'm gonna use the original sort of nomenclature. So the first X1 is gonna be that first determinant of that first auxiliary matrix divided by determinant of A. And that's gonna work out to be, according to our computations, 8 divided by 4 or 2. The second variable is going to be minus 4 divided by 4. And the value of the third variable in the solution is going to be 12 divided by 4. So very rapidly, and using only the determinants, you can solve square linear systems. All right, let's do an example of an inverse calculation for a 3x3 matrix as well. This is going to be a little bit more labor intensive because we're going to have to compute all the cofactors of this matrix. And there's going to be 9 of them, one for each slot of the original matrix. So let's start computing them. The first one is going to correspond to the cofactor associated with this position. We have, when I compute these cofactors, I'm ignoring the actual entry here. I'm really just interested in the position here and the associated minor. So here I get a sine factor from the position and also a minor I get by deleting the row and entry corresponding to the 1-1 entry of the original matrix. So you get that and calculate all three of the cofactors associated with the entries in the first row. I'm going to pause here because here's my formula. I'm going to apply this formula to get the inverse. I'm going to anyway also need to have the determinant of A. We can compute determinants using cofactors. And so I can actually use this calculation not only to partially create this matrix C, but I can also use these three cofactors to compute the determinant of A. Because I can do a cofactor expansion of this matrix along that first row. And what do I get? Along that first row, we would fix the row index to be 1, and then we would compute the cofactors associated along that first row. Well, it's exactly these numbers. This is going to be the cofactor C1J. We've computed all these numbers, and now we just put them together, and we see that the determinant of A is minus 2. All right, so what I've got so far is I've got determinant of A, that's been computed, and I've got the first row, C11, C12, C13 of the cofactor matrix computed, but I still have more entries of that cofactor matrix to compute before I can apply this formula. So let's go ahead and get those. Here's the second row cofactors. Well, look at this guy. I guess I write it out. So in this entry here, I'm gonna need a sign. That sign is gonna be, this is in the 2-1 position. So the sign it's going to be minus 1 to the 2 plus 1, or minus 1 to an odd number, or simply negative 1. And then the corresponding minor, delete the column and row corresponding to that entry, and you're left with a matrix 2, 1, 1, 1. So there it is. And we can do it for that entry. We can get a similar expression for the 2, 2 entry, and the entry in the second row and third column of the cofactor matrix is going to end up being minus 1. Now I've got the second row computed. C1, 2, C2, 2, C2, 3. And what remains, as far as computations go, is I need to get the cofactors in the last row. Now the row index is 3, and I compute. All right, so what I've done is I've computed 9 numbers, and now I've placed them in a matrix in their natural slot. In the first row, first column, I'm going to use the number C1, et cetera. All right, but this is not quite the matrix we use in this formula. We use its transpose rather than C itself. So what I have to do next is take the transpose of this matrix, which means taking the first column and writing it as the first row of the transpose. So minus 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 1, 1. I'm just converting columns into rows to get a new matrix. And now I can write down, with all the data I've computed, I've got this matrix. I computed the determinant of A. I guess it worked out to be 2. And so I simply take this matrix, and it worked out to be minus 2, I think. Where was it? Back. Yeah, the determinant of A itself was negative 2. And so all I have to do is take this transpose of the cofactor matrix, divided by negative 2, and then I've got the inverse. No row reduction at all. Okay, so those are the two nice algorithms for solving linear systems or computing inverses of matrices without doing any row reduction. And it just involves this calculation of the determinants, which you should think of their complexity, the fact that you need 720 separate terms to write down the determinant of a 6x6 matrix. You can think of that complexity as being related to the difficulty of the problems they solve. Solving a system of 6 equations and 6 unknowns is generally going to involve a lot of row reduction. But if you simply have formulas for determinants, such that a computer software program might already know, then these computations are really rapid. And in fact, it's typically the way Maple or Mathematica or Derive or any of the other common mathematical software programs is typically the way they invert matrices and solve linear systems. Okay. So I'll stop here. One thing I want to ask, if there's anyone who has not taken back either their first exam or second exam, I've got them here. So you can come pick it up. I do want to sort of insist that you at some point pick up your exam before the final, because what I typically do on the final exam is I look for the problems that cause the most difficulty on the first two exams, and I give you a second chance on the final. But if you don't know what you did wrong, then you're sort of in a bad position. So do pick up your exams, and with that, I'll let you go for today.
Have a good one.
Yep, you too.